Welcome to New Media Currents. I'm your host, John Houghton. Today's topic is Web 2.0 for the enterprise, what corporations really want and use. On this panel, we hear from Intel, Cisco, Procter & Gamble, and BEA, and discuss their new technologies such as blogs, wikis, and podcasting, and how their companies are using these tools to increase productivity and efficiency.
What we're really trying to do at P&G is understand, you know, as Ross said, a lot of our employees are using these tools outside, they're consumers of it. We want to bring those same tools and thinking inside. So also, a lot of the learning we're trying to do is, how does this work in a corporate culture? I mean, companies, particularly of our size, are command and control, hierarchy based, and you can aspire to be more networked and aspire to be more transparent, but the reality is, you know, at least in our case, there's 160 years and a couple, you know, tens of billions of business every year that are based on a command and control structure. You can't throw that away tomorrow.
This recording took place at the Web 2.0 conference in San Francisco, California on April 18th, 2007. And now, here is the conference session.
All right, well, welcome. This morning we had a great panel. We had Ross, who's making a guest appearance again. But this morning we had a great panel that talked about the innovation that's happening within young companies and how that can translate into enterprise sales, et cetera. We have a panel that's really full of a bunch of people who have been purchasing the stuff and bringing it into the enterprise. We have representatives from Cisco, from Procter & Gamble. We have our friend over at BEA, and then we have Ross again. I'm from Intel, and specifically Intel Capital. So I've been spending the last probably 18 months of my life really looking at companies such as Ross's, companies that are really being innovative, and then talking to the people that you see here on the panel and many others to say, hey, what are enterprises actually going to buy? I'm also the one that's been behind Suite 2. You saw the booth downstairs. The reason why Suite 2 came to pass was because there's a lot of demand, a very high amount of demand from the enterprise for Web 2.0 technologies. Intel's a good example. Intel uses three different wiki providers, four different blogging providers. We use it all. And the reason why we use it all is because anybody can bring it into the enterprise. A small group of four people, heck, one person could bring it in, make the purchase order, and start using it. And so I'm going to go through, the way we're going to format this is we're going to go down the line. They're each going to tell about some of the things they're doing or their corporation is doing about consuming Enterprise 2.0, consuming Web 2.0 applications into the enterprise. I have a few questions. We'll do this sort of panel style. But I'm really going to save a lot of time for some questions from the audience. Since most of you are in the space, you're entrepreneurs in the space, you have applications that probably have a lot of demand for the enterprise. And really try to solve the problem of what really is needed, what steps have to be taken in order to be acceptable or to be receive a big contract outside of advertising, right, the other revenue source. And so I'll just turn the time over. We'll just go down the line.
There's always a benefit and a risk of going first. So I am Michael Lenz. I work at Cisco. Realistically, I'm just going to focus on, as you're saying, the consumption side of it. Obviously, there's actually some people here from Cisco as well that are on the web marketing side, as well as some of the product teams and the play into the consumer space that, you know, the company's doing. Specifically, I just want to kind of focus on not necessarily the acquisition strategy or the mobile solutions group or how Cisco is really positioning itself in the other spaces, but rather as a consumer of what's going on and how we're repositioning Cisco as a whole on the internal side of the house and things like that. So I'm the user experience manager within Internet Strategy, which is in corporate communications. And what we're focused on is the evolution of the user experience across the enterprise. What that means is, you know, if an employee is interacting with a website, an application, an email, an instant message, what does that actually mean? How does that actually work? Things along those lines. So specifically, some of the things that we've been really looking at as holistically as we can is, you know, when you look at the things that Cisco is doing as a product company in and of itself, you know, you think of it and say, okay, well, how many people have been on the network here? You know, can I see hands? Okay, so if you've been on the network here, you've been on a Cisco product, right? We are the foundation of, you know, the experience. So you can look around and, you know, those are our things with the little funny ears that look like rabbits, right? So realistically, a couple of things that we're taking a look at is how do you actually leverage the network and the information you can get from the network and pull it into the context of user experience. So some of those things are the fact that, you know, Cisco's intranet in and of itself is in excess of 15 million URLs. We have several hundred, if not, a thousand separate web applications. I've been working with Cisco for over 7 years, and I filled out one piece of paper during that entire time. That was when I came on board and went through my new hire process, and they made me sign my little thing that said, yes, I'm a Cisco employee. Post that, not a single piece of paper has come across my desk that I've been required to sign. Right? So we are living what we're talking about here. So what we're trying to do is take that entire web property, leveraging tools as far as this stuff, you know, social bookmarking, the experience, expertise location, the fact that I have an entire development team that's based in the UK. I have a team that's based in Australia. I have a team in wherever. And they don't necessarily know who each other are, that they have the expertise in that space, that in fact there's four or five different teams in Cisco that's trying to build an application that allows you to find someone with expertise around user-centered design or IP telephony or IP telephony in the network space in healthcare, things like that. That's what we're trying to solve. And when we're looking at that, you know, we have an entire user experience, an entire visual vocabulary that we've established across the entire enterprise. We can't just buy a product, drop it into the network, drop it into this entire intranet, and expect it to work. Again, you know, there's a mental model that's been established. We can't plug and play. So that's where we go into, you know, the applications that, you know, Ross is building, that Suite 2 is pulling together, and we're trying to figure out how do you actually take those and plug them into an experience that we have today. How do you actually apply those to the business requirements, the user requirements we have today, and actually come out with something that's going to increase productivity and allow us as a company to shift from a command and control company that's based in San Jose with global accounts and global offices to truly a global company that is based on collaboration and community and shared expertise. And that's our challenge, and that's what our team is attempting to do.
My name is Ross Mayfield. I'm the CEO and co-founder of SocialText. It's an advantage to be first and a risk as well, and we like both and took both. So we're the first wiki company, leading provider of enterprise 2.0 solutions. And I guess to address the question, I could talk a lot about how, as a 40-person startup, we've been using these tools since day one, as a virtual organization from day one, and then growing in various ways and living and breathing on blogs and wikis and Skype and IRC and all these other things that a lot of folks in this room do. But when it comes to large enterprises, maybe the voice that I can add is some ways of thinking about how you might look at adopting and supporting these things. So what I like to, you know, a wiki, as you guys probably know today, you know what a wiki is. 4 years ago, I had to explain that in every single session as a group editable website. Now people know wikis because of Wikipedia, because of the widespread proliferation of open source wikis. Raise your hand if you have a wiki. Yeah, so that's a lot of wikis, right? I could probably keep going and ask, in your large company, do you have two? Do you have three? Do you have four? Do you have five? And you have them everywhere. Do you know how many? Yes. And that's part of, that is not a problem. Some people will probably say that's a problem and you need to standardize and centralize and immediately. What you have is this wonderful, you know, bottom-up ecology of things that are being tried out, champions that are co-investing themselves, taking ownership, the very same people who are going to be the lead users to train your other users. So the first place is understand what you've got. Then what you can do is sit there and go, okay, where can I apply a wiki or any of these other tools to a given project, albeit perfectly at the beginning of a project, not in the middle of it, a group of people, or a process. And the really interesting stuff is when you start looking at process redesign using a wiki. You can sit there and ask yourself a different question. What would happen if we made this process more transparent and more participatory? Right. So to talk about a non-business example, you can look at with the Howard Dean campaign, 4 years ago, he had a staff of like 8 people that were doing news clippings and figured out, well, we're kind of short on funds and everything's, you know, we need to be efficient and productive. But we also have all these volunteers and all these people who take interest and are already doing this activity of reading newspapers all day about what Dean's doing and saying. So he opened up the process to 400 people who were doing clippings, and you had one editor that would scan through not just what did they clip within the wiki, but what were they talking about internally on the blogs as a way of helping things bubble up. And so his role then was more of editorship, analysis. And that's the same thing for all kinds of business processes for knowledge workers throughout the enterprise. It's very similar to what we did for a competitive intelligence group within SAP, for example, which Disclosure is one of our investors. So, you know, I think the interesting thing is that let things experiment a little bit, right? Take advantage of the fact that you have, like we have an open source version. There's lots of open source alternatives out there. Let users, if you can, within whatever your policies are about where data can and can't be, take advantage of software as a service options. It's not that people fill out a PO. They whip out their corporate card and just get going for their work group. And that's a great thing, honestly. Because what's happening now is we have this consumer, literally cultural revolution about using these tools where people are learning to write in something besides email. They're learning to write on web pages. It's really about that simple. But the fact is it's getting people participating, creating structure around information, helping them not only be more productive by not having a tool get in their way of getting something done, but also sharing, making things transparent in ways that really will save and transform your corporate culture.
Please. My name is Joe Schuler, and I feel like I've spent the last 3 days being one of those painfully obvious answers in my son's preschool books. It's like, which of these doesn't belong? I work with the Procter & Gamble Company out of Cincinnati, Ohio, and my role there is I'm part of our innovation arm for our global business services organization. And what we do is essentially keep our eye on and keep the pulse of research and trends in academia and in the consumer space to try to decide, you know, what services, products, tools we offer to the global community of about 135,000 employees spread out across about 80 countries today. And my specific focus in the organization is trying to improve the productivity of the knowledge worker in the commercial aspects of our company. So if you think about, you know, what Tapscott calls these cognitive, non-repetitive tasks, right? So it's things that you need to do that you need to think about. We've squeezed a lot of productivity out of other parts of the organization. This is the one kind of remaining frontier that we think we can get a lot out of and hopefully leverage some of our scale. So my focus is primarily inside the firewall. Obviously, Web 2.0 for a marketing company such as our own also has a lot of impact outside the firewall. But what we're really focused on today is trying to kind of unlock the wisdom and insight of 135,000 employees and beyond using some of this. A company of our size, we've fallen down on more than our fair share of taxonomy problems. So obviously, folksonomy and tagging has a lot of appeal to us. We have lived in a very siloed culture where we have a lot of team spaces and control. So transparency, to Russ's point, has been a big issue in information systems. It's also created some real problems with search. If any of you hear from a corporate organization and have a PageRank-based corporate search, I'm guessing you're probably not as satisfied with that as you could be, as if the documents and the structure kind of replicated what's going on in the consumer space. So what we're really trying to do at P&G is understand, you know, as Ross said, a lot of our employees are using these tools outside. They're consumers of it. We want to bring those same tools and thinking inside. Also, as Ross said, I think a lot of it is doing experiments. And that's really the phase that we're engaged in right now. And what I'm kind of here to talk about today is, you know, we're putting a lot of lines in the water to understand, you know, what we can do in this space. And there's really kind of two vectors we're trying to understand. The first one is, what are the right bits and bytes here? And there are some choices and things that are going on that make that decision easier and harder. The big boys getting involved in this space changes it a bit versus kind of being able to pick best in breeds and do it off of your corporate card and do those kind of under the radar experiments. So that's one piece we're trying to learn. But I think one of the themes of the conference and one of the things I've heard several times is it isn't about the bits and bytes. It's about the network. It's about the social elements. It's about the culture. So also, a lot of the learning we're trying to do is, how does this work in a corporate culture? I mean, companies, particularly of our size, are command and control, hierarchy-based, and you can aspire to be more networked and aspire to be more transparent, but the reality is, you know, at least in our case, there's 160 years and a couple, you know, tens of billions of business every year that are based on a command and control structure. You can't throw that away tomorrow. So we're trying to learn from a cultural point of view, how do you translate inherently social activities, platforms, and benefits into this innately hierarchical organization? And what are the differences in the motivations of people in terms of sharing and participating in these? And then how can you drive network effect in a little bit of a different way? So that's kind of an overly long description of what we're trying to do. If anyone was hoping that the P&G guy would be here with the answers, I'm sorry. I have a lot of good questions. If anyone wants to talk about questions, that's great. I'm sure people with products to sell, you know, love to hear about what they do too. So that's what we're here for.
So my name is David Meyer. I came to BEA through the acquisition of Plumtree Software about 2 years ago. And so I've been in the portal space since about 1997. And early on, as a company, Plumtree, we started using our products to run our business, as I think any sane software company will do. And it became interesting because in a lot of ways, portal infrastructure was a precursor to some of the Web 2.0 memes, like an architecture of participation, loosely coupled, federated over HTTP. All the architectural principles of our portal software lended themselves nicely to this. So in about 1999, 2000, we started doing a lot around collaboration and documents, and we let our customers, our partners, and sometimes our competitors collaborate with us on documents using our collaboration software, bridging the intranet and the extranet. And that was very interesting for us. Then in the 2004 timeframe, we started using wikis a lot internally because we found that our own collaboration software, which was radically flexible by some measures, was too restrictive to the way people wanted to think, specifically engineers internally. And so we have a lot of wikis spreading throughout our organization as part of the design process. Back in 1997, we took concepts from the consumer web, then Yahoo-type concepts, and applied them to the enterprise in the form of a corporate portal, and we saw the revolution happening in the now called Web 2.0 set of technologies and memes, and we thought that would be fascinating to apply internally, and we started to apply some of those things in our own infrastructure as a company. So, for example, when we got acquired by BEA, we wanted to give them a window into our organization, and we had this portal, but the portal was somewhat too structured and somewhat too rigid to use, so we wanted to provide a new interface on top of it. And one thing we did there is we wanted to let people, as mentioned earlier, do expert location. People in greater BEA, we wanted them to find out who knew what in Plumtree. And so we invested in some usage analytics capabilities in our product sets a bunch of years back, and we thought, what if we gave people an ability to find experts based on what people implicitly do? So if I upload a document and it has to do with a subject and 1,000 people download it, then if somebody searches on that subject, they should find me as an expert. And we found that as a concept that worked shockingly well. You could find the product manager, the engineer, the salesperson, anybody else associated with a subject simply by how they implicitly, selfishly use documents in the system. So that's an example of trying to take some of these higher level participatory notions and bring them into the enterprise. And we also realized that we needed a second wave of innovation around our own products. So we began about a 3-year arc that's culminating now, where we have a number of new products that let you bring a lot of these Web 2.0 notions into the enterprise. And as we talk about them, there's going to be the natural reaction that this is big company, corporate approach that's going to kill a lot of the beauty of things like social tech. So I think that as Ross and I start talking, his initial perception might be that I'm evil. But what we'll find out is that this will allow the command and control structure to be comfortable with this culture and architecture of participation without in any way limiting it. So, for example, we're starting to use these products internally, and we have a new product, and not as a product pitch, but just randomly called Ensemble, which will let you layer it on top of wikis, and you can determine who can access those wikis, because sometimes that's important. And when you have an insider trading investigation internally, you can find out if somebody wikied about some insider information, exactly who accessed it over the previous days. Now, you might say that's evil, and that's against the Web 2.0 cultural memes, but what it lets people do is allow that culture of participation within the boundaries they're comfortable with. At companies like, what's that?
Social responsibility
with social participation. And I, for one, am very excited about that. I happen to be a very transparent individual. I'll tell anybody anything. And that doesn't always fit well for me inside my own corporate context. But this allows me to be socially responsible at the same time as galvanizing our internal communities to work better with our partners and customers. And I'm really excited about that.
So I hear a few things here where it looks like the corporations are adopting these technologies. It's coming in through different holes through the corporate credit card. Ross talked about the social welfare of bringing it all in, being loosely, share information. And yet I'm looking at three corporations, and I can look at my own, at four corporations that are very large that aren't mostly populated with young people that just came out of college that are used to these things. Do you sense any discomfort in your organization from the Web 2.0 movement as people are starting to share things in wikis? We hear every day about different things that are disclosed to the press that probably shouldn't have been because someone blogged about it. Is there any discomfort within the large organization, especially within the generation gap, from those people who don't go to MySpace or don't go to YouTube?
Let me touch on that one a little bit. So I wouldn't say that necessarily there's that, but there's a lot of things around misunderstanding of what it is or a complete lack of understanding of what it is. And I think that the conference itself is representative of that, in that I've only been here a day and a half, but in the sessions I've been to, it's either been extremely technical or you're talking to the people that really, really, really don't understand it, in my opinion. Now, the thing is, it's like when you start looking at that, it's representative of potentially two things. One is that, the middle layer didn't attend the conference, right? You have basically the foundation of people that is very wide, or you have the top of the pyramid, and it's been catered to that. That's fine. But realistically, that's also representative of a lot of corporations, in that you have a lot of people that don't necessarily understand what it is. We have, as our team, we are the responsibility of, we have the responsibility of enabling services across the enterprise. Hence, we've had conversations with the folks, and I'm sure tons of other people are here. Mm-hmm. Realistically, what that means is that when people come to us and say, hey, I need a blog, what does that really mean? What do they really have? What is the communication issue they have that they're trying to solve? Versus saying, oh, okay, you need a blog, okay, go to intake.cisco.com and blah, 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 and here it is, and here's the process, and you're good to go. No, what we're looking at, here's a list of technologies, here's the current state of them, this is their deployment, this is how you can use them, but also here's the communication solutions of the business problems that you have and communication problems you have. And I think that's a fundamental difference in at least the way that we've been approaching it and are approaching it now. And there's reference to transparency, where a lot of the adoption issues across the enterprise that we've had is it's isolated. You have, how many different business units, how many different teams. And what we've started to do, and this is a fundamental shift that we're trying to do at a corporate level, is making sure that there's transparency in the fact that, okay, we don't necessarily have an enterprise solution for blogs, but this is the funding, these are the resources that we have, these are the resources we don't have. If you want to go do something, don't deploy it on your credit card, mm-hmm. please. Rather, take that credit card and apply it to the enterprise solution. Right, and that's fundamentally what we're trying to do, and it's a little different. It makes us a little nervous mm-hmm. because we're exposing ourselves, we're exposing the fact that we don't have funding, we're exposing the fact that we're 12 people short, and that's something that's fundamentally different that we're attempting to do and have only started in the last quarter. And so far, we've had incredible buy-in from the various people, because it's just it's transparency, right? Which is the value proposition of relevancy of information, content, and context. And that to me is what, Web 2.0, I hate the term, but
that's what it is.
Although transparency in the consumer space is nice, because I might find a date or might find someone attractive on MySpace. Right. Transparency in the corporate setting might mean I'm potentially going to lose my job.
Exactly.
Because they realize I'm inept at something.
Yeah. Yeah. But in 4 years, we haven't had a single report of any user using this stuff misappropriately, right?
Yeah, because they're gone. Yeah. Well, I don't think that's ever.
No,
but I think you're right. I don't think the risk is that they're gone. I think the risk is that generally the companies that have been progressive enough to get going on this have also been smart enough to think about it a little bit, or have employees that are smart enough to think about it a little bit. If you have information that can get your company sued, generally, you know that information can get you sued, and you deal with it appropriately.
Right.
Now, the lawyers and the auditors are very, very serious about, well, wait a second, you don't have controls in place to make sure about that. That's been a lot of the gap that we've had to bridge with these tools. It isn't necessarily that the people doing it are doing anything bad. It's that in order to remain in compliance, you've got to show that you can keep them from doing something bad, even if they're not going to do it.
Right.
So that's been some of the issue that we've had in the space. I do think, to Rob's earlier question, there is a generation gap, and there definitely is an expectation gap. You talk to somebody who has, made a relative degree of success in one operating paradigm, and their first reaction when they create a piece of knowledge or content is, how do I limit this to the need-to-know people who need to see it?
Well,
that's fundamentally very different than the person who just started with the company who says, I can't wait to tell everybody about everything I just did. And we're trying to find ways to enable the one without burning the other one to the ground, as tempting as that might be.
Yeah, I think that there's a new etiquette that's emerging. And people from there's definitely a generational gap. I hear every week somebody telling me angrily, you can't do that, because they think it's going to compromise their own authority in some ways. And I think that at the O'Reilly eTech conference, there was an interesting session on, it was talking about why people break up with their girlfriend, boyfriend on the web. And in the first sense, that's kind of disturbing. But then upon further investigation, they avoided the spin cycle. They could say exactly what they said, and the he said, she said wouldn't corrupt it into them being, pick your favorite adjective of a bad high school person in a relationship. And I think that happens in the corporate context. People sandbox on wikis and in an act of behaving badly because they're that kind of toxic person in the organization. But what they'll find is it doesn't matter, because they'll be ignored because people know who they are and the role they play, and it kind of... The etiquette changes, and there will be people seeing when a person acts badly on a wiki, other people get mad, but it kind of self-corrects itself because of the way a wiki works.
We really should emphasize, though, how incredibly boring it is behind the firewall. The blogs are not about people's cats. They're about projects, right? A lot of wikis aren't, you don't have these it's not like as exciting as a George Bush page on Wikipedia, right?
I don't know. We got some of those going on, too.
Yeah, so
you have passion, debate, and all this discourse and stuff like that, but just keep in mind that we've already been through all this with email,
right?
And if I'm disgruntled, I'll broadcast to everybody and the CEO how disgruntled I am. And
exactly.
The policies are in place. You have an existing organizational, for good or ill, organizational structure, norms, policies. And so it's more adapting to that. Some cultures are a lot better at it, right? Are more prone towards transparency. May have things like 360-degree reviews in place, as an example.
Yep.
And so that's also something that has been driving who's more of an earlier adopter than others, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah, I think the other piece of the generation gap that's really interesting is that executives outside the Valley here love the viral nature and the uptake, and I actually had one tell me, well, why go build YouTube? And I felt like saying, well, YouTube already built YouTube, it's there. What do you need YouTube for? And a lot of it gets down to, it isn't about the bits, which is what you're saying. You have all the policies and you have the needs in place. What it is, it's about translating
the communication needs of an individual or a group with the content, with the intent, with the needs. And that's been a lot of the challenges. This community here, in the Web 2.0 area, has done a great job kind of naming things, blogs, wikis, social bookmarking. What's happening, though, is that the brands associated with them become kind of iconic, and you have to, kind of deconstruct what people are asking you for when they say, well, can you just build MySpace for Proctor? And I'm like, well, hey,
for Michael's
MySpace has Proctor, it's there.
So what have you seen on, we're close to the end of the conference now. There's a few things that have been implemented that there were known to be enterprise applications in the Web 2.0 space. Ross is a good example. There's blogging tools. There are some tools that are built for the enterprise to use. What are some of the things that you see out there that are really consumer tools that you really wish were being used inside, or even things that are being used inside that just don't fit right now, but you wish they could fit?
The sleeper hit in the enterprise for me, the one that I'm waiting for and dying to get going on, is social bookmarking. We have, we have a very, very large knowledge base on our intranet that is all in silos and not connected in one way or another. And so we have struggled with, certain large Mountain View companies' product to determine any authority in a search. And we love the product, and everyone loves them, and they're the darling, but we can't make it work. And so what we're hoping is that with, even a small but passionate community out of our 135,000 employees, we can start to get some real benefits in terms of enterprise search. And, if you think about the basis for all of these Web 2.0 tools really taking off and transparency, it's once I know that the stuff I put out there can be found by others who need it, I'm much more motivated to put it out there. So we actually think social bookmarking is the big kind of breakthrough hit for us.
And as a shameless plug, there's one of the three products we're coming out with is attempting to solve that problem, and only time will tell whether or not it does. But the conceit behind it is where Google Rank works brilliantly for things that are linked by analyzing the links. In the enterprise, as I mentioned earlier, humans are the links. If I upload a document and you download it, then
disagree.
It's linked.
In that the humans are the input, right? Or the people or the
nodes.
The nodes inputting into what?
A network.
A network.
A graph.
A foundation, right? The interoperability needs to come at the network level.
How did I know it was going to come back to network?
Yes. Well, crazy thought.
Yeah.
Right? But, realistically, you look at it, what is the foundation? What is the common platform? Common platform is open standards in interoperability of the foundation that happens to be the network we happen to be by. Or at least I do. Other people in the room that are from Cisco.
I don't disagree, but ascertaining inherent network value of business objects and people and things in the network,
mm-hmm.
will probably start in the application tier before it breaks down to the
network. So there's relevancy that can be gained from plenty of network data, right?
Mm-hmm.
The fact that you can either have profiles, right, and knowing unique instances and people, or representatives, right? And if you know either one of those, then you can construct ecosystems around, be it information, behavior, any number of different things. Mm-hmm. And to me, that's where I see, it's like all these things, you look at it, and going back to, a couple other sessions, mm-hmm. it's electricity. Great. Okay, so you turn it on, you plugged it in, the rest of it. At a certain point, it doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. It's the fact that, okay, you're going to make a toaster. Awesome. I need a toaster because I like toast, right? Or I like waffles.
The funny thing is, I think we violently agree.
Great.
Cool.
It'll
so
just be a race.
What I like to see is, some of the stuff that, Intel has done with Suite 2, and the fact that, there's no open protocol necessarily for plugging in social bookmarking applications in with Confluence or this or that or whatever.
Sure. Well, I was getting lost in the architecture and was hoping you were saying we had to push OSI down, or the OpenID down into the OSI stack, like layer 2 or something, which
that'd
would be
sweet.
But the but I honestly, just make some tools where there's people and you have less tool in the way between the people and watch what happens. The mm-hmm. answering your question, I think you will. IRC is the sleeper hit in the enterprise that hasn't happened yet, but. All these things started on the public net first. I actually want to see things like Yaiku or Twitter, or variants of that, that are less interrupt prone, and see how those work. I do think, actually, that the standards are kind of there also. With the social text, we have an art to a degree. We have RSS feeds for every page, tag, search query, watch list, weblog, wiki. We're trying to create a standard out of AMMO, a REST standard for wikis. We're supporting the Atom publishing protocol. As of this last weekend, when somebody was like, gosh, you know, why don't we have that in our API and, you know, put a little bit of effort into it, right? Thank God that the early blogging participants on the consumer side, before the big guys came in, started just focusing on interop on their own.
Yeah.
And, you know, honestly, the technology on the enterprise side doesn't need to be that much more complex.
No, absolutely not.
Yeah.
I completely agree that the content space is there. Atom, RSS, REST, mm-hmm. we're doing very, very well in the content space. Mm-hmm. The ability to syndicate content from X to Y is great. I think where a little bit of the boost is needed mm-hmm. is in the user experience space. Mm-hmm. And this was something we were talking about before, where if your motivations to, you know, share your great pictures of your kids or your cat, or to put your, you know, passionate blog post out there is relative, you know, you're willing to take things on from a user experience point of view. I'm willing to have 43 different logins and profiles and maintain them. Mm-hmm. I think the activation energy in an enterprise to share information mm-hmm. is probably a little bit lower. Mm-hmm. And therefore the experience needs to take, as you said it very well, take some of the layers out of the way. Mm-hmm. And right now those layers are still there. If you try to, and the big boys are coming in trying to kind of remove those, Intel, so their credit's coming in trying to remove those, that's going to be a lot of what takes us to the next level.
So one more question before I open it up to everybody out here. Is there, so no one gets fired for buying IBM or, you know, pick your analogy, from Microsoft, whatever it might be. A lot of these things are new companies, small companies, that are mostly relying on advertising because they look at the enterprise and they say, oh, that's, not only is that a big beast, but I have to have all these more features to my list. It's going to be a 6, 9, 12-month cycle, and by the time I get to the 12-month cycle, they're just going to pick Microsoft or name your vendor anyway, because, you know, we're a small company and there's just not a lot of trust. Do you see that, or is there more willingness now for a large enterprise to take a chance and to make a big purchase or a big bet on someone who's really innovative but maybe not larger or a huge of scale?
So let me jump on that one. So what we've seen is the fact that innovation is coming from the garages, the husband-wife team. A perfect example is that, again, going back to the fact that people are asking for, I need a blog, I need a wiki. Well, what they need is casual authoring or casual editing, right? We have, again, going back to the 15 million URLs on our intranet, are we going to migrate all that to a content management system? Why, right? You're going to do that kind of investment, and a lot of the stuff's legacy, the rest of it. Why not enable the framework, our standardized UI, leveraging YUI design patterns, right? Why wouldn't we enable that framework to do casual editing? It just so happens that the technology that we're looking at right now is by two people out of Bozeman, Montana, that is going to enable casual editing in our framework, right? So the risk factor, yes, there's a risk, but the return is significant. And I think you can see that both in our consumption, but as well as the fact that the Media Solutions Group, you know, acquired a company with 50 or 11 people with two accounts. And that's the social bookmarking foundation for Cisco's consumer play for media delivery.
Standards set you free. I mean, I think that's really a lot of it. And that, to me, the more that the standards develop outside of the content space, so into OpenID and user kind of mm-hmm. identity and authentication, the less you're beholden to what the big guys can give you and lock you into. The flip side of that is, you know, I'm sitting in the keynote the first day, and Mina Trott says, okay, you know, there are those 10,000 user companies that can really weigh you down and slow you down. I'm going, oh, God, you know, we're only 15 times that. We must look really bad to them. So I do think that there is a lot of feature churn. I do think, though, that as companies get more amenable to open source platforms, to standards-based platforms, and then also to the providers that can go out there and extend them a little bit for them or tweak them themselves. We don't have to go back to Ross, or maybe we do go back to him and say, here's an extension we made and under open source, mm-hmm. you can have it back, and we all benefit. So we're there, we believe in that. The issue is you still have with a lot of your senior executives large companies that have a vested interest in whispering in their ears, you better buy from the big boys. Mm-hmm. So what we're really trying to do from an innovation and a bottom-up point of view in our company is kind of start to discredit some of the larger advising firms and start to say, you know, listen to them, that's all well and good, but listen to us too, this is happening, and we can mitigate the risk via standards. Mm-hmm. We can mitigate the risk by participating in the communities and not dominating those communities, so to speak, but more becoming part of them.
Okay. Open up to the floor. Any questions you want to, please?
Yeah, this is to the entire panel. What B2C technology, if any, do you see as threats or concerns that undermine corporate privacy or sensitive data, and how is it being addressed?
Anybody paranoid on the panel?
Well, I can speak one of the biggest concerns that's been brought up.
Oh.
The question was, do you see any B2C technologies that are serious threats to your privacy kind of and policy concerns inside the firewall or inside the enterprise?
Yeah, so information security, right? So one of the things that we've been dealing with is the fact that podcasting is very pervasive within the sales force, right? So you look at that and say, okay, sales guys, gals, salespeople, SEs, sales engineers, what have you, are on the road a lot, right? They're not necessarily tethered. They're not necessarily online. So training material, what's the best method? Podcasts, right? Vodcasts. So we have an extensive library of vodcasts. Mobile media, is it secure? Well, we've asked Apple to put it on the top of their list, but last time we checked, there's no authentication on an iPod, right? Or a Trio or a flashcard on a Trio, you know, things like that. So what we've done is basically, you know, introduced to the best of our effort things around that, such as on the beginning of each podcast, information security announcement, you know, reminder, this is Cisco confidential information, right? Things like that. Please, you know, please pay attention. Don't leave it on a chair in the airport, you know, stuff like that. But realistically, there's a recognition that the value that it brings to the corporation and to the enterprise as a whole, to the company, to the productivity, outweighs the risk. Right. So with that, innovation is allowed to prosper instead of being a policing action to crush innovation. Mm-hmm. Rather, we're embracing it and, again, going to the transparency. If you lose it, tell somebody, right, so we can take care of it.
I think the one thing I saw, so when we put Suite 2 together, we talked to, you know, hundreds of enterprises and trying to figure out what they like and what they didn't like. The one thing I was surprised about was the discomfort of having data in the cloud from the enterprise point of view. You'd think that by now a lot of us would be comfortable with having hosted, and some corporations are very comfortable with it. But some people, especially when it comes to wikis, and maybe Ross can speak to that a little bit, but they say, hey, I'm collaborating on a project. I'm collaborating on something important to the product life cycle of what I do. I'm afraid that if I put it in the cloud, someone else is going to find it. I want it to be behind the firewall.
I think outsourcing is making people more comfortable with the cloud, because you realize that if a third party is running your data center for you, you're already in the cloud. And so the risk is already there. So I don't think that's it. To answer your specific question, Gmail. People are passionate about email. They love it. And running an email system is shaving a yak to the nth degree, right? It just sucks. There's so many things wrong with having to run your own email system. And we had to put restrictions on users that made Gmail so attractive that we had to figure out something. And we're actually, you know, apps for domains is something, or apps is something we're looking at and we want to offer as choice. Anytime you don't offer your users choice, that exact problem that you described pops up every time.
What you just said was really interesting, because it was very similar to when we got a wiki past our first compliance officer, where we had to, you know, the initial reaction was, we need to moderate and censor anything before it goes up. I need to approve it, right? Now, if you did that, obviously, there would be no wiki. You'd have, well, what you had before and stuff like that. And then what we did was to show them, look, you have a copy of every edit stored, and you have the identity, who did what at what time. And so what is it? It's like, instead of putting electric collars around people with zappers anytime you trespass, you post a sign, and then if someone crosses over that line, you kind of do a little bit of an investigation and prosecute. Right? And that's, in all honesty,
and
I mean,
the hand of God comes down.
Yeah, exactly. And the problem is, I think people in the enterprise really believe that they do have the hand of God, right? When in reality, a good portion of security is somewhat of an illusion or just simply too expensive, right?
In the back.
We're sort of circling around the topic that I've been struggling with folks in our company. that's a large chip maker. What constitutes a knowledge object? I used to work at the top one management consultant, and for them it was a PowerPoint deck, and that's no good. Mm-hmm. A wiki entry is getting a little closer, an email is even closer. What is a knowledge object that then can be, you know, you figure out the technology around that, mm-hmm. that everybody's happy with, and people, you know, the exec will use it and the engineer will use it. What's that going to be?
So it's anything that people spin stories around, right? So Yuri Yenserm has this great blog post, will the glory be, about object-centered sociality. And the whole thing, when you look at Flickr, you've got a picture, and you've got people spinning stories around it, right? Whatever the artifact is, that's, I guess, the closest thing, although that's kind of KM language, so I don't know it as well.
I mean, yeah, this is knowledge capture before people walk out the door. Right. This is a faster way to do something. I want to make sure it's captured.
Mm-hmm. Right. So focus less on the capture, right, and the content, and thinking of content as assets, and think about people and participation and their incentives to share when it's transparent and then searchable and discoverable.
Yeah. I think any idea or fact mm-hmm. is an object. I mean, for example, we're looking at how you pull a record out of SAP and wiki around it in context, secured to whoever can see that record in SAP. Because there's a fact there, and facts mean humans participate with facts every day in these ad hoc cognitive work styles that we all have. And the smallest atomic level of idea or fact...
Is it going to be fact? I'm saying...
Information is, you know, you can define it any way you want, or it's undefinable. I mean, in theory, it could be a thought, right? It could be... shorthand that no one can understand except the people that were in that conversation.
And I'm asking you as experts, what do you see as the emergent thing?
So that thing, if
is text, you know, it's like text is the new.
So to me, it's rich media, right? That's where realistically you look at what's happening today, or what's been happening for, you know, since we've had digital text, right? Transformation of analog to digital has been its text. What we're seeing is, or at least internally, we have telepresence, right? Which is high definition video conferencing that literally you punch in a phone number, it rings, the entire system's up and running. Ease of use. You know, we talked about the user experience. The fact that you have the ability to either, you know, use Skype or any number of other technologies that have that fidelity that hasn't existed before. And that's where I see the evolution, truly what the value proposition of Web 2.0 is relevancy and fidelity, right? And if the foundation's there, the technology's there, the stability's there, the fact that, you know, this little company in Montana used the YUI, well, it just so happens that that's plug and play with our entire interface. You know, anything that people are writing, hint, uses that design pattern, in theory, can be plugged into our entire framework. So with that, we're able to expand a foundation with the collected power instead of having to, no offense, buy, you know, a $17 million piece of software, we're able to buy a couple hundred thousand dollar plug-in.
That's right? Funny.
I think Ross's application is a little less expensive. I'm not positive. We have time for one more question.
Starts at free.
Yes.
We'll round it, but just a quick question. Do you see a problem in data island? This new application, wikis, blogs, each of them create its own data island tied to specific version of specific application. I haven't read social text. Maybe it has magic export functionality, which will export my wiki, which will be imported to other wiki. Mm-hmm. But I doubt.
That's exactly what I was saying.
So, yes. It's locked in this wiki, and only way to move it everywhere is copy-paste. Mm-hmm. So, do you see problem in this increasing corporate problem of data?
It's so much easier this time than it was before, right? Because first of all, unless you make your stuff too complex on purpose, all wikis support one standard, HTML, right? So you've got all of the data being represented in HTML. That is a standard that is not going to go away, for example. It's a little bit of a simplistic answer, right? But the point also is that if you look at all these guys, what are they doing? They're providing stuff based in standards, whether it be RSS, or some of the more emergent standards. This is a heck of a lot better than any other case of any category that you can think of in enterprise software.
Yeah, and I think the one thing else I'd say is search is becoming the tool that ties it together. You had those pockets before where you had structured data versus unstructured data. How do I get my SAP system to talk to my PDF document and make sure I gather that all together? We're not there yet, but there are some search technologies that do that. Now the search technologies plug into what our Web 2.0 applications are really open to share. They have open APIs and you have the ability. I don't think we have a solution yet, and I think that's probably a good place for someone to innovate and probably the next category of really penetrating the enterprise.
But yeah, I think also, you know, unless the siloing affects the user, the knowledge worker, it doesn't matter. There can be silo, like if you want to put a video in your blog, who cares if it's on MetaCafe or YouTube or, you know, another video hosting platform? The user doesn't care. They get to hit play and see the video. So I think that getting that same level of anybody can access the right information with simple, usable, lightweight tools partially makes the data silos. For example, you're not going to restructure your internet in the 52 million pages that's in it because they're all there, and that's okay, as long as users can get the cognitive work done they need to get done.
As long as they can find
but
it, sure.
You may also not be just talking about silos, but switching costs. If I want to exit out of one application and move on to the
right,
other. Well, here's a nice thing, right? You can get your data in and out of almost all the tools that I've seen as by rule anytime. Largely in a standard format, but then a lot of these guys go a step further like we do, where if you want at the end of your short contract, you want to exit the data, right, take all the data out, you can put it onto the open source version and run it on your own, right? That's about as low as you'll get a switching cost to ever be, right?
Yeah, that's the long-term total cost of ownership appeal of some of the more open platforms as opposed to the big boys is the portability. Or the perceived portability that standards compliance can buy you. Mm-hmm. And that, to me, is the big, big, big difference right now. You know, I could probably rip the MySQL database out of the bottom of one tool and throw it into the open source version tomorrow, and I'd be pretty close. Mm-hmm. So I do think that, you know, depending on what layer of abstraction that standards base comes in, that's the only thing that's going to save you from lock-in in this space.
I think we've run out of time, but I want to thank the panelists for participating.
Thank you for joining us for this edition of New Media Currents. This podcast was co-produced by CMP Technology and O'Reilly Media. For more information on New Media Currents, please visit newmediacurrents.com.